This podcast was recorded at Hartford Street Zen Center, Isanji, in San Francisco. Please help support our temple by making a donation at hszc.org.
Morning.
Morning.
Perfectly happy to have continued sitting here and not say anything, but the schedule says 10:15 Dharma talk, and so there you go. Besides, Katagiri Roshi once said, you have to say something. It's not really my inclination to say much. I'm naturally an introverted person, and my preferred interpersonal dynamic is with three or four people at a time. That works the best for me. Also, when I was in the sixth or seventh grade, I had a absolutely mortifying experience with public speaking, and I remember it to this day, and so maybe that's baggage I'm hanging on to unnecessarily, but nevertheless, there it is. Also, I sometimes have fairly serious reservations about my ability to say something to anyone that might be construed as meaningful or helpful in some way. For some reason, I've been thinking about meaning a lot lately. I don't know why, because I thought that was over and done with in a way. When I was younger, teenager and young adult, I was rather consumed with the question, what does it all mean? And just through happenstance, I came of age during the kind of hippie period and was exposed to D.T. Suzuki and Alan Watts and Carl Jung and things like that. So that really dovetailed perfectly with my questioning. And as time went by, that sort of the riveting aspect of that question kind of faded away. And sometimes I wonder, is there such a thing as meaning? What does meaning mean? I guess one definition of meaning would be, what is the ultimate significance of something? And I suppose it depends on who you ask. Some people would say maybe the ultimate significance of everything is that God is love, or the ultimate significance of everything is making as much money as you possibly can before you check out, or the ultimate meaning of things is to have a loving and satisfying relationship with one particular person or with people in general. I was watching a Netflix documentary the other night. It was a man, I think his name was William Gibson. I may have that wrong, but I think that's what his name was. And he is an author whose seminal work is Neuromancer, which was a science fiction novel of the late 80s, early 90s. Very famous for that. And apparently he created an entire genre that's still with us to this day of sort of cyber sci-fi. And he's credited with having coined this term cyberspace. And I was watching this documentary, and it's one of those things where if you don't want to see a movie of one person talking for an hour and a half, don't bother. But he did have some interesting things to say, and I guess in some circles he's regarded as even a visionary. But in the course of the interview, the interviewee, or interviewer, excuse me, said, it seems like in all your novels, your characters are always in search of meaning. And then either he or the interviewer said, they're searching for a pattern in the flow of data. And I thought that's actually a pretty good description. We're constantly being bombarded by data, and in a rather superficial way, in modern urban life, there's smartphones, and there's movies, and there's images, and there's talking, and there's people, and there's work, and there's just all this stuff going on that just seems like a constant bombardment. But actually, even when you're someplace quiet in the woods, or maybe even in the Zendo, the data flow is still going on. There's always a thought, or a sensation, or a feeling, or an intuition, or something. So it does seem like that there's this human tendency to look at all of that and try and discern a pattern. I'm not sure if pattern is meaning, because to use a metaphor, for instance, of a fire, if you look at a fire, it's recognizable as fire. It has a certain pattern, the way that flames move. And so it's not water, because Water is recognizable as water, and water has its own pattern. And both those patterns are moving, though. If you take a photograph of water, you take a photograph of fire, it's dead. You still recognize it as fire, but it's not moving. It's not alive. Another example might be, if any of you are familiar with fractal geometry, if you look at a digital animated representation of the Mandelbrot set, the closer you move into the pattern, the more you see, and it goes on forever and ever and ever, apparently. And it's still recognizable as the Mandelbrot set. You know what you're looking at, and yet it's changing all the time. So it seems like sometimes that's what meaning is, that meaning is not really something you can get at and nail down. Meaning is as amorphous as anything. so many people, they want to nail down all four corners of meaning and then put a stake through the middle of it, and there, I've got it. Now it's all set. Now I know forever this is what something means. And of course, it's dead when you do that. So, is there only meaning and because we give meaning to something? Or is there some underlying inherent meaning? I have a tendency to think meaning is what we give to things. And yet, if you study, for instance, Carl Jung, he would say, I think, as if I understand him correctly, that underneath the surface of things are these things called archetypes, which operate in the collective unconscious, and they manifest in all of our lives in different ways. And create sort of a substructure or a matrix to the human mind. So is that meaning? Is that some sort of underlying meaning to everything? The human consciousness? Jung would say, I think, that the purpose, and of course purpose and meaning are not exactly synonymous, but the purpose of life, once again as I understand his teaching and viewpoint, is called the process of individuation. It's becoming whole. It's looking at and gathering together all the various aspects of one's conscious and unconscious create a whole entity. I'm not sure what that has to do with Buddhism. Sometimes it seems like there's overlaps there between Buddhism and Jungian psychology. What is the purpose of Buddhism? Is it to become enlightened? Well, the teaching of this school says that's already happening. All you have to do is manifest it. So do we manifest meaning? Or do we give meaning to something? Or is it a two-way street? Two or three days ago, I had a dream, and I woke up, sort of woke up, I was kind of half awake, and the dream seemed kind of important somehow, and I wanted to remember it, and so I laid awake for a while, and I went over and over the different aspects of the dream to try and sort of set them in my memory, because usually I'll have a dream, and it's like, oh, I had a dream, I go back to sleep, I wake up in the morning, all I know is I had a dream. I don't remember anything about it. But if you'll pardon me for going on a little bit at length with the dream, I'd like to use it sort of as a metaphor. I came down to the Zendo, and a monkish figure was coming in through the door over there, and he was wearing a gray pinstripe suit, impeccably tailored. The jacket was a little longer than usual. And I thought, oh, that's such a nice suit. I better go get a hanger for him to hang that suit on. So I went upstairs to get the hanger, and one of the rooms on the second floor was empty, and I thought, oh, whoever's lived there has moved on. And when I had that thought, I realized the person had moved to Marin County, and an image came up of a hermitage on the mountain facing the west with a window, perfectly framing the peak of Mount Tamalpais. It might be interesting to note the name of this temple is One Mountain Temple. I'm not sure if there's a connection there or not, but nevertheless. So I came down, and by the Doan seat was a little closet, and I put the hanger in the closet. I was looking for the suit, and I didn't see it, but there was a rather rumpled samugi or samwe or whatever it is you call the gray or brown kind of pajama-like outfit that monks frequently wear when they're not wearing robes. Anyways, I came to enter the zendo, and in place of the altar, Anantatami was my late teacher, Hissan, facing this way, and there were 9 monks sitting cross-legged with their hands in gassho. And I entered the zendo and I bowed as usual. All the monks bowed. And I came over and I sat right here. But the monks were facing that way, and for some reason I was facing that way, towards an empty chair. So I got up to leave after a while, and this one had been talking about the death of the teacher of a female friend of the temple. And I don't remember the words exactly, but the images that came up were, for instance, if you should have the great good fortune to be totally lucid in the moment of death, that it would be something like watching a flower die in slow motion, or watching the ice crystals form on a pond in slow motion. That it's very slowly, very subtly changing, changing, changing. And it's not good, it's not bad, it's just changing. And there's, beauty might not be quite the word, but there's an appreciation of that change. So that was the dream. And I was lying there and I was rolling it over in my head. And actually, I love that state when you're not awake and you're not asleep, because the mind is very fluid. That point. Normally in our day-to-day lives, the mind is, I think, my mind is anyways, rather rigid. It tends to want to lock on things and hold them down. And in that kind of drifting state of consciousness, you're much more open to multiple and overlapping meanings. So I was thinking that, well, that monk coming in was he discarding his persona of the outside world when he came to a place of practice? Was that rumpled suit in the closet a skin bag? Why was I not facing the same way as everyone else? But it wasn't like I was ignoring the teaching. It was still here. My orientation was elsewhere. I was rolling all these things over in my mind, and it was an interesting exercise. And I can't say that I have set upon a meaning of that dream. But I think that actually, if we allow ourselves that, life is like that. I mean, life is a dream, a bubble, right? Gone in an instant. And normally our approach to life is it's rather, we want very firm parameters. We want order. We want that pattern. And because we want that so much, we're not open to multiple interpretations or shifting interpretations, changing interpretations. If the flow of data is changing all the time, and we're seeking for a pattern, it seems like the pattern is changing all the time too. So, is there anything to be got at? Is there any underlying significance? Jury's still out on that one. I know some people, I've encountered quite a few of them, that have come to practice and they hang in it for a while and then they go away, and I always kind of wonder what happened. Is it like the refrain from that old Peggy Lee song, "Is that all there is? Then let's keep dancing, let's bring out the booze and have a ball." I mean, did they not get the meaning that they were looking for? Did they have some meaning in mind and the meaning they got didn't match up? What the hell happened? I'm afraid if that's one's approach, one's going to be sorely disappointed. This other program I occasionally watch. You see, I get all my information from TV, just like Donald Trump. this fellow that is the host, I guess you'd call him, of this show, is he's a neuroscientist, but I think the poor thing must be a Christian. Because he's constantly searching. He asks questions that, to me, have no meaning. Can God be scientifically proved? Can he exist if God be scientifically proved? Oh, I'm sorry, that's a stupid question. But then again, I'm not a theist. So perhaps if you lean in that direction, that it'd be a perfectly valid question. Funny, when I was thinking about having to give this talk, all kinds of thoughts occurred to me. And of course, now I can't recall them. I suppose if we sat here silently long enough, something would pop up again. She might die of boredom in the meantime.
Something popped in my head when you were saying people you're wondering about people leaving, I think there's also a positive side that people come through and it's part of their life. And, you know, I don't know if you, like, to me it sounded like you thought it was like, oh, what happened to them? Did they not get what they need? But maybe they got what they needed.
Maybe that is true.
You know, I mean, because I was talking to an old Zen Center person, we were talking about people on Facebook, and a lot of people went off and did good things. Some people, it's like at least one person was like, oh, what happened to him? But, like, you know, the other people seemed to,
yes,
you know, it helped.
We don't know.
I mean, right, just
hearing one line of the sutra,
yeah,
it may be enough.
Right, so I think just to hold that up too, like that it's not a failure when people, I don't know if that's what you meant. But,
well,
yeah.
You do have to remember I'm the glass half empty guy.
Okay.
Always keep that in mind when you're dealing with me.
Okay, well, that's good to know. Yeah. Okay, so that's why
But so it's
did.
Good. It's good for people like you to point out, you know, the glass is also half full.
Right, yeah.
You know, so
yeah.
Thank you very much.
All right, thank you.
But that really is true. We don't know.
Right.
We know, people come and people go. That's all we know.
Right.
We don't know why. We don't know how. We don't, you know. So it could be, there could be any reasons, and you could construe them as positive or negative depending on your point of view and their point of view. Right. So.
Yeah. I mean, and it's kind of like you're saying the meaning, like this fabric is so huge that we can't see all, at least I can't, all the causes and conditions.
Right.
Maybe a Buddha can, but it's hard to tell what's going on.
Yeah. So you just keep going.
I guess so.
Do the best you can.
Yeah, there is.
Oh, sorry.
Maybe Jim first.
Oh.
I was just going to say, I find this search for answers as, maybe it's simply because I'm getting older, but it's tiresome.
Mm-hmm.
And so I finally have come to an answer for myself is to just let things be. Just let them evolve as they're going to evolve. And I sort of live by the precept to try to bring good into everything that I do.
Try and bring
goodness or
uh-huh.
compassion. And that striving is, you know, it's all consuming. So I think letting it go has been helpful for me.
I think I kind of take a similar approach. I don't really think in terms of seeking for answers so much, although like I said, if for some reason it has been occurring lately. I can't help but wonder though, there's always this skeptical part to my mind that says, okay, let's say you just sort of accept things as they are, moment by moment. Is that enough? You know? I think as long as I'm willing to keep looking without any expectation of an answer, that's okay for me. You know, like when we do something like we read Dogen, and he twists and turns these words in such a way that the rational mind can't quite get a grip on it, and yet he seems like every other paragraph he says, study this deeply. And then I remember David Chadwick, in one of his writings about Suzuki Roshi, said Suzuki Roshi was always saying, this is the most important point. And David said, well, wait a minute, how could this be the most, you just said this other thing was the most important point. So how can everything be the most important point? But actually, I think that's a pretty good question to keep asking. How can everything be the most important point? And not, and you don't really get an answer to that. So, thank you.
Why there has to be a meaning in anything after all? Like, you know, why we need to dwell on this? Not only it's impermanent, but it's also changing so fast. There's nothing to think, grasp. There's nothing, really.
That's one new point. And the only thing I would say about that is, if there's nothing, then why do anything? Why bother? Life's a pile of shit. You know? Why do anything? Why make any endeavor? It's all empty. See, you see what I'm saying? If you take that to my way of thinking, if you take that sort of thinking too far in one direction, then the critics of Buddhism are right. Oh, Buddhism is a nihilistic religion.
Well, I mean, there is conventional, you know, way of looking at things that enable us to function in the mm-hmm. world and have a relationship with each other, with things, with society, you know, but on a different token, you know, there's just really it's sort of waste of energy to talk about the meaning of things. You know, there may be auspicious things here and there, but it's just like, okay, I'm practicing, then I'm sitting, what does it mean, right? I met this person, a teacher, the timing is good because we met on December 31st, you know, all that kind of craziness. So I'm just saying that kind of ponder on meanings. Sometimes you gotta be kind of careful at the same time, kind of open to.
Well, that's actually what I was saying. Is like I don't think meaning can be nailed down.
Yeah.
It is not something. It's not a totally rational thing. If meaning exists at all, and I'm willing to say that nothing has any meaning. I'm willing to say that, you know, but I'm also willing to say everything has meaning.
I mean,
so which one is it? It's like, I mean, it's not, and it doesn't have to be either or.
Yeah.
You could say nothing has meaning and everything has meaning, and it's one minute you might say one thing, and the next minute you might say another. So these are, all this conversation we're having and these ways of thinking are all bound up with words and the use of language and so on. If you're just sitting, then whatever is happening is happening. You know. But it's not, meaning is not something that you can get at and keep and put in a box and there it's there forever. If there is meaning, to my way of thinking, it is always shifting, just like everything else is always shifting.
And I think maybe not an exact synonym, but a near synonym for meaningful is worthwhile.
Worthwhile?
Worthwhile. So if, for instance, if you help out a homeless person on the street, most people, they have some good feeling, like, well, that was worthwhile what I did. So is that, how does that strike your sense of meaningful? And also, do you find it meaningful to give a talk?
Well, I'm not sure about that part, actually, because you sort of have to ask the audience on one hand, you know, the people that are hearing the words, was it meaningful? Hell no. You know, or yes, please, thank you, and do it again sometime.
Is it a worthwhile effort for you?
I've already had the conversation with myself. You know, so I don't know if I find it any more useful to speak the words out loud. Some people do, I think, find it helpful to write down things or to speak things. I seem to be reasonably satisfied with my internal thought processes such as they are. But one thing I do like about speaking is when there's some sort of exchange. Because then there's a feeling of connection of some sort with people, and they may agree or disagree with what I have to say, but it opens a dialogue, which I personally find, like what Max just said a moment ago about, well, you never know why people do this or do that. And so that was actually helpful for me, because my tendency is to get into my own little box with my own little thought processes whirling around in there. So in that sense, I do find it useful when there's some exchange. Yeah.
Mean about the connection to worthwhile, to the word meaning that you used. And I think the word worthwhile, when it comes to my head, there's a aspect of judgment attached to that. Like, you know, the show is worth your time, or that sort of thing. So, is it possible to have meaning without any sort of judgment attached to it?
Well, I think in one sense, it's impossible. Because if you use the synonym, like, you know, just if something's worthwhile or useful, well, then the opposite, of course, is it's not worthwhile or it's not useful. So that there's a dualism there, right? So you could say, well, something's meaningful or not meaningful, and but, you know, meaningful for who? Or useful to who? You have to ask that question. I mean, because it more than one person's involved, you know. Is this conversation we're having useful to you? Yes or no? Is it useful to me? Yes or no? So in that sense, it's sort of bound up with a dual way of looking at things. So meaning beyond, you know, a judgment sounds like something for the metaphysicist to talk about, in a way. You know, I think when you start trying to approach it in that way, you're getting into the realm where you can't even use words anymore. So is there meaning without words? Well, I don't know. When you're sitting zazen, and then let's say you have that moment where there's no words arise, those are far and few between for me, Is that meaningful? It's sort of, in retrospect and looking back, it seems meaningful, but I can't pin it down. I can't really even talk about it. So from that point of view, yes, there's meaning without a judgment. I think judgments are caught up with yes and no, and that's something that we frequently apply after the fact. Like, you have an experience, and in the moment of having the experience, there can be no judgment. You know, there's a possibility of no judgment in the experience of, like, if somebody hits your thumb with a hammer, you in this nanosecond of that strike, it's not, oh, that hurts. It's just what it is. Later on, you think, God damn it, that hurt. You know, or conversely, something pleasurable happens, like a sexual orgasm or something. Well, in that moment, it is what it is. Later on, you think, oh, that was really groovy. I got to do that again sometime real soon. You know, so I think language, it sometimes it follows experience. I mean, it follows so closely that it's virtually impossible to separate them. But I think it's like you can't even measure the distance between experience and the thoughts that come from it or around it. Isn't that confusing? Did I help you out in any way there? Personally, I find it interesting to ask questions and just keep asking questions. It's like being in that state of not quite awake, not quite asleep. It's interesting to roll things around. It's like savoring the taste of food, and it's a little salty, it's a little bitter, it's a little sour. But you don't have to even nail it down to being delicious or not tasty. It's just the process of savoring. Okay, I think we've had enough of that. Unless somebody's got one more interjection.